The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
When I get back into the Oval Office, we will totally obliterate the deep state. We will establish a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to declassify and publish all documents on deep state spying, censorship, and corruption. By the way, they spied on my campaign. They got caught. Can you imagine if we, let's take Barack Hussein Obama, let's say we spied on his campaign, you got caught. What do you think would happen? You think it would just be some stories in only a few newspapers, because most of them don't even want to write it? They would have brought back the electric chair. That's what they would have done. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. Unequal justice.
There's Donald Trump yesterday in campaigning in New Hampshire. I guess that'll be one of the early stops in the Republican primary, but he's taking on more and more of a warlike stance, going up against the deep state, as he calls it there. And if you've noticed, I mean, he's also released quite a few videos on policies. So, I mean, he's got a platform. He's running on issues. And of course, he knows this time around, he knows much better this time around than last time what it is he's truly going up against. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. The last show of the week. Hard to believe we're already at Friday's broadcast. You can get to the live stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com. Just go to TrumpetDaily.com every weekday morning at 11 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone of the United States. And you can watch along with our live audience. If not, you can listen later or watch later on demand. Just go to our websites and look for The Trumpet Daily. So this Ready for War issue, this is the issue we kicked off 2023 with January. Ready for War, picture of Donald Trump on the cover. And my father says here, the battle lines are drawn. The stage is set for one of the most dramatic fulfillments of biblical prophecy we have yet seen in our lifetimes. It says here, on one side of this political battle in America is the Democratic Party and the radical left. There is also, we now know, establishment Republicans. He's talking about or describing here the Uniparty. They're joined by the media, both leftist and conservative, and big tech, with the single exception of Twitter. All are arrayed together. It says on the other side is Donald Trump, virtually alone, virtually on his own. Here he gives this long speech, takes questions at the end once again. He jokingly said, "Do you think Biden's going to take questions?" Biden has the questions listed out on a cheat sheet before he even gets up. That's what his press conferences are. It's just all theater. Not so with this one. Not so with Donald Trump. He is unique. They're drawing attention to age in the case of Biden because they want to try to use that as an excuse to ignore or to remove Donald Trump. Here he's giving this speech in New Hampshire, and again, right across the board, it's virtually ignored. They just don't pay any attention to it. That's the approach they take with a message they don't like. It's not about presenting, you know, newsworthy events or facts. I'll show you later. Well, go ahead and play that one. Is it number 8? I think it's ABC, I believe, sitting down with Robert Kennedy Jr. So he's the one that's been very outspoken against the vaccines and such. He wrote an entire book about the fraud that Fauci is. Anyway, he's running for president. He wants to primary Joe Biden. I mean, that's a pretty significant event in and of itself because there's lots of people that don't want Biden to run again. So ABC sits down with Robert Kennedy. They have a nice little discussion. And then listen to what this reporter says at the very end.
We should note that during our conversation, Kennedy made false claims about the COVID-19 vaccines. Data shows that the COVID-19 vaccines prevented millions of hospitalizations and deaths from the disease. He also made misleading claims about the relationship between vaccination and autism. Research shows that vaccines and the ingredients used for the vaccines do not cause autism, including multiple studies involving more than a million children and major medical associations like the American Academy of Pediatrics and the advocacy group Autism Speaks. We've used our editorial judgment and not including extended portions of that exchange in our interview.
We've used our editorial judgment to leave certain portions of our discussion out, to blot it out. So Robert Kennedy can't take some of the positions he does, or at least if he does, it can't be broadcasted. It can't be put on the air. It's her job to selectively edit the discussion. They're all in on it, see? It's all about the theater. It's all about how the message is framed. This is why they have so much contempt for Tucker Carlson. Even as millions and millions of people follow him wherever he goes in droves. I mean, they are hungry. As I said yesterday, they're hungry for someone that's just willing and able, that has the courage to tell the truth. Last night in that speech in New Hampshire, again, Donald Trump jokingly said, I'm going to take the moniker crooked away from Hillary Clinton and put that now on Joe Biden, crooked Joe Biden. Because, and again, all joking aside, the criminals are in charge. You may not be able to say that Joe Biden is a communist through and through, but he certainly is engaged in criminal activity. The communists are running the show from behind, of course, from the basement. There's plenty of them around. But here comes Joe Biden, who's enriched himself to the tune of tens of millions over the length of his political career. He and his family. You can skip that one, number three. Just move ahead to number four from yesterday.
Because there's never been anyone in the history of American politics so crooked or dishonest as Joe Biden. And the press absolutely refuses to report it, all that press back there. Because, frankly, they're just as crooked as he is, and they are. They're just as crooked. The choice in this election is now between strength and weakness, between success or failure, between safety or anarchy, between peace or conflict and prosperity or catastrophe. We are living in a catastrophe.
And he correctly points out there that the press, they're just as crooked as the Biden crime family. I've told you this week about the another disastrous pullout from Sudan. America sending in its forces to evacuate the embassy in Khartoum. That happened, I think, last Saturday. And then the lead up to it, you had U.S. authorities basically telling something like 16,000 Americans that are in Sudan that, hey, you know, you're on your own. This is from Fox News. It says the U.S. has extracted its diplomatic staff from Sudan as security conditions in the country worsened late last week. But the evacuation left thousands of Americans behind. Thousands behind, just like Afghanistan. I mean, this is speaking of platforms, this has been on the Biden platform from the very beginning. America last. Americans last. It says here, in a security alert Tuesday, the State Department reiterated that due to the uncertain security situation in Khartoum and closure of the airport, it's not currently safe to undertake a U.S. government-coordinated evacuation of private U.S. citizens. Instead, it advised the estimated 16,000 Americans believed to be in Sudan to remain sheltered in place. Well, that's comforting. Here there's civil war breaking out in this nation, and they're telling Americans, just stay where you are. We can't come get you. We're not going to do like all these other countries and go in and get their citizens out because we're the United States and it's too dangerous. This is actually happening. And where are the journalists? Where are the reports about yet another disaster? This is from Al Monitor. Well, first of all, just play this exchange. Hopefully you can hear the reporter okay. But the reporter's asking, the French lady, basically, do you you know, all these other countries have evacuated their citizens. How come the United States hasn't done it? This is clip 10.
A number of other countries have evacuated citizens over the course of the last several days and taken advantage of the ceasefire the U.S. helped put into place. The U.S. still has not. What is different about your risk assessment right now, or security assessment, than what other countries are looking at as they've gone in and gotten their people out?
So, want to be, as you know, when it comes to risk assessments and intelligence, we're very careful to not speak to that, but we've been pretty clear in laying out and communicating with the American people. You've heard us here from the National Security Advisor. You heard it from the State Department, from Secretary Blinken directly. And we have been clear on what the president laying out, which is what I did, laying out what at the president's direction, what we have done, how we've moved forward, how we've worked with allies and partners to get Americans out. We've been pretty clear about this for the past several months, for the past year, what the situation in Sudan. And so we're going to continue to have those conversations.
What a delicious word salad that is. We've been clear. We've been clear. We're going to continue to talk. We've got good discussions going. We've been clear, and we're going to continue the discussions. What are you doing to get Americans out? This article from Fox News, it says, while the U.S. says it's too dangerous to get its citizens out, other countries are proceeding with evacuations of their nationals, including France. Listen to this. France, Germany, Italy, the United Kingdom, Spain, Holland, Turkey, Japan, South Korea, Jordan, South Africa, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia. South Africa can go in and get its citizens out, but the United States of America cannot. It's too dangerous, says Joe Obama. Remember the Sundance quote from earlier this week, where he said that this fundamental transformation to these communists, that's all that matters. It's all about the domestic issues. It's all about the domestic transformation. They couldn't care less about what's happening in Sudan or anywhere else around the world, or how that this makes the United States look. Another shameful episode. All of these calamitous events, as Donald Trump talked about yesterday in New Hampshire, and the media, of course, not paying attention to Trump or what's happening in Sudan. This is clip 5.
With such a calamitous presidency, it's almost inconceivable that Biden would have even thought of running for re-election. He's destroyed our country. And yet he says in his recorded piece that he wants to finish the job. That's right. He wants to finish the job of destroying our country. But on that, he's actually very close. He is very close to finishing the job, unfortunately. One of the most important issues in this campaign will be which candidate can rescue. And this country needs a rescuing. We have to rescue America from the wreckage of the Biden economy.
And that is going to happen. I mean, it will be saved, not by any politician. Don't misunderstand, but it'll be saved by God, by God's hand, and just temporarily at that. I mean, these are, as he said, these are calamitous events, sobering events that should jolt us, that spiritually speaking, we talked this morning in epistles going through the last three chapters of 1 Timothy, where Paul, on two occasions, he says, lay hold on eternal life. I mean, reach out, and it's like it's right before us, but we've got to grab on, and we've got to hold fast. As he says in so many of his other writings, hold fast to the truth. That, as I mentioned yesterday, following on what Tucker Carlson has said a few times over the last week, holding on to the truth, it makes you stronger. It will make you more courageous. There's so many lies all around. And the devil, of course, John 8:44, is behind it all. And the media, for their part, they just play right along. Okay, we'll sit down with RFK because, well, you know, I guess he is going to run in the Democrat primary, although the Democratic Party has already said there's not going to be any debates. They're not going to put Joe Biden out there at 80 years of age, even if he had a stack of 25 cheat sheets. They're just not going to do it. They're going to try their best to blot out Robert Kennedy Jr. And as you saw in that ABC report, here comes this smug journalist and her team, selectively going through the interview saying, now the party said here about the vaccines, we'll go ahead and erase that or make sure that the public doesn't see that. In our editorial judgment, the verse that at the end of 1 Timothy 6 talks about science, falsely so-called, fake science. Lots of fake news to go with it. Speaking of this cheat sheet, the LA Times, that was the reporter. She worked with the LA Times. You saw most of the question on the cheat sheet, and then she didn't state it word for word, but it was pretty, that the gist of it was there on the cheat sheet. So somehow, some way, Joe Biden's handlers knew what that LA Times reporter was going to ask. Now, the LA Times has come out and said, nah, we weren't working, we weren't in cahoots with the White House. So how did it happen? Well, no one seems to know. You listen to the French lady yesterday, and she seems to think that this is just normal. It happens all the time. Clip 9.
To people who saw that pocket card, can you explain how that ended up there and why the president needed something like that?
So just to step back, and I'm actually glad you asked that question. Clearly, I would let the reporter for Los Angeles Times speak for herself. It is entirely normal for a president to be briefed on reporters who will be asking questions at a press conference and issues that we expect they might ask about.
And look, we saw Donald Trump with his hand-scrawled note cards. You know, there were images of that constantly when he would be at events. I remember Rudy Giuliani as mayor in New York City. His folks would come up to us in the press corps and not only try to figure out what we were going to ask, but tell us what he wanted to talk about.
Sure. So that's Maggie Haberman at the New York Times there at the last. And then you had KJP, and then you had the one asking the question, you know, what about this? What about this? Well, it's normal. I mean, you go, you're going to get briefed, right? You're going to get briefed on what they might ask. Yeah, but they had the question in advance. What about that? Is the media there to ask hard questions, or are they just to stand up and do what the White House tells them to do? It's a huge story. It's scandalous. And yet, you're still going to see reporters like that one at the end saying, you know, I remember Donald Trump doing this and that. And of course, well, Giuliani, he also, his handlers came out and tried to tell the press pool, hey, would you ask about this, that, and the other? That's different. That's totally different. I mean, having a relationship with the press is one thing. Some banter back and forth and suggesting, well, I hope you get into this topic. But in the end, you want a free and independent press, do you not? We're supposed to be having that, judging by the foundational documents of this nation. But look at what these people, these organizations have turned into. They're the propaganda arm of Barack Hussein Obama's administration. That's all that it amounts to. And that's why Tucker couldn't stay around, not on Fox even. Because, well, the message, he came out, he brought too much truth with him to that nightly broadcast. Matt Gaetz, by the way, tweeted out that we're going to be shocked at the next career move of Tucker Carlson. I don't think he used that word, but he seems to be in the know and seems pretty excited about what's next for Tucker Carlson. We'll see. This is clip 6 from yesterday in New Hampshire.
Now we got to straighten out our borders. We got to straighten out our elections, because we're like a third world country. These incredible poll numbers are one of the main reasons that the Marxist left is coming after us, using the criminal justice system for massive election interference. That's what they're doing. They want to weaponize law enforcement to interfere with our elections through the use of the DOJ and the FBI, attorney generals, and local district attorneys.
And all of those weaponized agencies, they're going hard after that man right there, because they see the polls. They see the disastrous polling for Biden on the one hand, and then they see the enthusiasm and the excitement for this man, like in New Hampshire yesterday. New Hampshire, that's in the northeast of the United States. Trump there pointing out how that these agencies have been weaponized, brought to you by Barack Obama. It's been a years-long process to bring this about. You see this, I mentioned yesterday, Abby Grossman. She was the basically the spy you know, the Murdoch's spy on the inside. And now Fox News, I mean. And now the government's trying to tap into some of the internal discussions that she heard, that she recorded even. I mean, if you're Tucker Carlson and you've got a studio set in Maine and you've got one in Florida, I mean, in the state of Florida, you can't record someone's conversations without their prior approval. You can't do it secretively, undercover. So it'll be interesting to see how that this unfolds. But you've got Jack Smith. He's coming in. He wants some of those discussions, particularly the ones that pertain to Ted Cruz. And, of course, January 6th. January 6th is a pretext for all of their power grabs, their overreach with respect to prosecutions and such. And Cruz hasn't said anything in those internal conversations that he didn't say publicly because they were going about it in a constitutional way, or at least according to their interpretation. And there are checks in place to see if this interpretation is constitutional or not. But you can go through the process. Of course you can contest the electors, because what if there's cheating that goes on? And of course, that's what many House reps and senators too. The Democrats tried to do it before as well. It's just that the times they protested, they couldn't get senators on board with it. Here's the difference, though. There were quite a few senators on board, and they were going to go through those official proceedings and consider. Ted Cruz was calling for a 10-day investigation to look into voter fraud, or if there was any. This is from Frank Meehl's Real Clear Politics piece. We've used this a few times over the last couple years. It says, if Vice President Pence had chosen to follow the plan set out by Trump's lawyers, he would not have been engaged in an act of insurrection, but rather an act of interpretation, and his decisions would have been subject to oversight by the Congress itself, as well as the courts. See, he did have some authority there. He ran from it, of course. He didn't have the courage, especially after the feds incited the insurrection, the Fedsurrection. And then they came back in, and so many of them that were going to contest, they changed their tune just like that. Because the media applying all of that pressure, Joe Obama's people applying all of that pressure on politicians, on big tech, on social media, all those things. They banned Donald Trump from Twitter the very next day because Michelle Obama made the call. We've been through this history before. This other article here points out, I think I mentioned this yesterday, this Abby Grossman, who's also filed suit against Tucker Carlson. She's never even met him. And she's bringing all of these accusations against Tucker. Doesn't even know the man. But, you know, it's about what you would expect in this two-tiered system of justice. So much injustice. Here again is Donald Trump from yesterday, clip two.
On day one of my new administration, I will direct the DOJ to investigate every radical district attorney and attorney general in America for their illegal, racist, in reverse enforcement of the law.
You can see why, as I say, they want to take him out. That's wartime rhetoric right there. A war, a political war, a war for the truth. This is from, speaking of truth and Tucker Carlson, this is from the Washington Examiner. It says, for Tucker Carlson, it might be the biggest payback yet since he was dumped from Fox News. In the latest Rasmussen Reports survey, the much-watched former primetime anchor's favorable ratings are higher than the cable network that fired him. Tucker's favorability ratings, it's at 59%, and it's at 52% for Fox News. So, you know, Darren Beatty pointed this out recently. He's with Revolver. But he said a lot of this contempt and animosity for Tucker is actually motivated by jealousy. They're just jealous. Here he was pulling in $20 million a year, and he had the most viewers of anyone on cable TV. He gets fired Monday without knowing anything about it, and then puts out a two-minute video. I didn't check the fig. It's surely up over 20 million now. He's popular.
And Scarborough hates that. David French hates that. Saw a little nice exchange between those two this morning as they hearken back to the glory days of Ronald Reagan. Here the nation is being destroyed, as Donald Trump correctly notes all through his speech yesterday. It's being destroyed. And these people, they're so deranged that they can't get past the bad orange man. The whole country could be going up in flames, and they'd probably still be complaining about a tweet. It's really amazing to see this play out. One more from, this is a longer one, from President Trump yesterday, clip 11.
I just have a question on election integrity. So we're all here for...
Or lack of integrity.
Thank you. That was going to be my next question.
Election
How
lack
are
of
we integrity. Going to take back 2020? I know we got 2024, but we need to still work on what happened with 2020. And how are we going to make America great again by taking back the 2020 debacle?
The best thing we could do right now, and there are a lot of people going... You know, working very hard on 2020 because, you know, history, you can't forget history. If you forget, you're doomed to failure in the future. But there are many cases going on right now. If you look at Wisconsin, what they found out in Wisconsin, they were one crazy vote away from turning over the election. And they should have turned it over. This was a political whack job that voted the wrong way. And other judges on that panel just excoriated him. But you look at what's happened in some of these states, they get it. They know what happened. But you know what we have to do? Never forget that. I'm not one of these saying you have to forget it. So many people say, sure, put it in the background. Put it. You can't forget. Because if you forget, they're going to do it again. What we have to do is we have to win. Because, you know, you're talking about a very short period of time. We have to win, and we have to win big. We have to win. We have to really swamp them. You know, if you swamp them, there's not a thing they can do. There's a level at which they can't do it. And to be honest, we did so well last time, I sort of thought we swamped them, but they used COVID to cheat, among other things. So they used COVID to cheat. We're not going to let that happen, and we're not going to hopefully have any of that. The problem is we have a lot of people without courage. That includes judges. We have judges that looked and they said, oh, boy, I'm not turning this over. They didn't have courage. They didn't have courage to do what should have been done. And it was just such a horrible, corrupt election. We have to have courage. And if we don't have courage, you're not going to have a country.
I've mentioned that quote from Malachi's message so many times. My father saying that courage may be the most important virtue. Because without courage, what good are the other virtues? And this man, you know, for all of his faults, but you consider the attacks, the withering attacks that have been brought on that man and his family, and he still stands strong. He still stands firm. He still calls them out. He calls out the corruption. He calls out the cheating. Whether or not you can do anything at this late stage of the game, about 2020, at the very least, like he says there, you can't forget the history. You've got to learn from it. And we'll see if this is the route that God takes to sort of swamp them so much with so much support that they can't possibly cheat their way to another illegitimate presidency in Ready for War, that January issue. By the way, the 800 number for Malachi's message, for a Trumpet subscription, everything we offer on this show without cost, without obligation, 1-866-930-3024. In Ready for War, my father says, after all the terrible attacks on this man for the past 6 years, it's remarkable that he has the stamina and determination and fight to keep doing battle for this country. He is a man ready for war. He's a man ready for war. You need to watch Jeroboam, it says. He's going to war his way back. He's going to fight his way back in. Listen again to one final clip from yesterday, clip 7.
And this is what we must do to save our country from destruction. 2024 is the final battle. If we don't take it over, we're not going to have a country anymore. I want to be positive. I'm just telling you, we're not going to, if we allow them to cheat, because it's the only way they're going to win the election, If we allow them to cheat again, you're not going to have a country. If you put me back in the White House, the reign of corrupt Washington establishment will be over and America will be a free nation once again. With your support in this election, we are going to complete the mission. We are going to finish what we started. We did so much. We rebuilt our military so much. But we have things to finish. Stand with me, and together we will defeat the globalists, the Marxists, communists, and the rhinos. And we will also defeat the fake news media, because they're in on the act.
Everything he said there, he's completely right. They're all in on the act. The rhinos, the Uniparty, both sides, the swamp, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, and the media too, all on board. All on. Who's going to finish their job? Joe Biden, in that announcement on Tuesday, he says, give me another 4 years and I'll finish what we started. Donald Trump says he wants to finish destroying the country. Donald Trump, for his part, wants to finish the movement that he started back in 2017. Went for a few short years, 4 years, before COVID hit, and then they used that as a pretext to cheat in the election, and then stole the election. And then these past 2 years, we're certainly seeing the consequences of all of this, corruption, all of this crookedness, as he said in his speech yesterday. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show with our Bible study segment. In between that, we've got our Friday edition of Current News coming up in just a few moments as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Global defense spending reached an all-time high of $2.2 trillion last year, according to a report published Monday by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. This is a 3.7% year-on-year increase, another all-time record. Inflation contributed to last year's spending increase, but Russian aggression was another major cause. Most European countries increased their defense spending by 15%, and Ukraine increased its spending by 640%. Although America still spent the most on defense in 2022, the Bible prophesied that in the end time, our strength would be spent in vain. The weakness of the West is changing the international balance of power, causing many nations to arm themselves. To learn more about the significance of a worldwide arms race, please read Nuclear Armageddon is at the Door. Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen spoke with his Chinese counterpart Qin Gang on April 17th. Qin offered China as mediator between Israel and the Palestinians in a peace accord. Cohen asked Qin to encourage Iran to stop its nuclear program, which endangers Israel and the world. The Chinese have a lot of economic leverage over Iran, and Israel may think China could pull a few strings to get Iran to cut back on its nuclear program. Whether or not anything comes of this meeting, the fact that Israel is looking to countries other than the United States for help is significant. Israel and the U.S. have traditionally had strong ties, but the current U.S. administration's anti-Israel stance has not inspired trust between the two nations. Many Bible prophecies emphasize that the Middle East is an area to watch, particularly when outside powers like China step in, and America's loss of power in this region is a significant change. Iran has shipped 300,000 artillery shells and 1 million rounds of ammunition across the Caspian Sea to Russian troops fighting in Ukraine, according to an April 24th Wall Street Journal report. Last summer, Russia turned to Iran for help after continuous setbacks in Ukraine. After Iran provided Russia with kamikaze drones, the EU imposed sanctions, but Iran has continued to support Russia despite the sanctions. Daniel 11 verse 40 says that in the end time, the King of the South, radical Islam led by Iran, will push at the King of the North, a German-led European empire. Iran's support of Russia in the war is one small part of its foreign policy that is viewed by Europeans as pushy and provocative. For a more detailed explanation, read Iran, the number one state sponsor of Russia, and our free booklet, The King of the South. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
I mentioned this example, excuse me, while I ruffle a few things. I nearly lost the wire going behind my head, so you caught me off guard, but that's today's current news segment. We do that every Friday. Of course, we've got the News of the Work segment. That's been a real hit. That's on Tuesday's show, so you can look forward to another installment of that on Tuesday. But this is a general order that went out from George Washington. He signed this document back in August of 1776, and he's leading the Continental Army, and he learns that there's quite a few in the army that had a problem with swearing, lots of profanity in the discourse, and this really upset him. And we've talked this week about the war between truth and lies. We've talked about the father of lies and how important and what a contrast it is with God, who is a God of truth. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." Well, following on that same theme, I mean, think about not even just the truth of the Bible, but just upholding the purity of godly language as well, even in the way that we speak one with another. George Washington said in this order, the general is, he signed this, so he had help, I guess, assembling it, with others helping him in that way. It says, the general is sorry to be informed that the foolish and wicked practice of profane cursing and swearing, a vice heretofore little known in an American army, is growing into fashion. He hopes the officers will, by example, as well as influence, endeavor to check it, and that both they and the men will reflect what we can have, that we can have little hopes of the blessing of heaven on our arms if we insult it by our impiety and folly. Added to this, it says, it's a vice so mean and low without any temptation that every man of sense and character detests and despises it. If you're a man of character, I mean, you detest profanity. And he says there in that statement that if you expect, you know, blessings from above, if you expect blessings from God, then you better keep your language in check. Use it to uphold purity and truth. You don't want to use it to tell lies. I mean, that's certainly profane language as well. But just the spread of profanity all across our culture, I know when I was growing up as a kid, you know, it was mostly confined to the areas of, you know, movies, maybe music to some degree. Of course, we didn't have social media and the internet back at that time. But look at the, I mean, forget about music and movies today. You see profanity coming out of newsrooms. You see it on, you know, the covers of books. I can remember when my son was really getting into reading. He was about 15 years of age. And we'd go to the Heathrow. This was back when we were living at Edstone. And we'd go to the Heathrow airport. He'd ask me, you know, do you mind if I go and check out the bookstore? And, you know, part of me would kind of cringe because I would tell him, well, that's fine. But, you know, if any cover has a curse word in it, you started to see the curse words in the titles of books several years ago. Now it's so common, it's not even shocking. Of course, it's meant to shock. Initially, it was meant to shock. But now it's just, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. There's no shock value left. And yet the profane language, I would encourage him, just stay away from those books that have the swear words in the cover. The other day I was listening to part of a sports podcast. It was at the end of the Thunder's season here in Oklahoma City. And so you're listening to a few local guys and, you know, you just get so used to it, you hardly think about it anymore. But in listening to it, there were about three or four times when some of them used a curse word. And it was totally unnecessary, totally gratuitous. Just throw it in there because, well, that's the way we discuss things. Even when we're just talking about basketball, we got to throw in those curse words. This is from a Salon article, again, about the curse, the frequency of it now, taking away from the shock value. It says, despite the occasional marketing hurdle, however, clearly these books are selling just fine. That's the surprising thing about all these supposedly irreverent titles. The premise of their humor is that they're shocking, but they're now so prevalent that it's hard to imagine being shocked by them. They are the product of a culture in which transgressing social norms has become an agreed-on social norm, says this essayist. Wrote of the naughty card game, Cards Against Humanity, a few years ago. Profanity is now utterly basic. Profanity is utterly basic. And with many young people, I mean, they've got pretty small vocabularies as it is. 200-300 words, perhaps. And then how many of them are profane words, curse words? It's really sad. It's really sad. It's just utterly basic. And of course, this is exactly the way the devil wants it to be. And it's such a shame with respect to our English language because, I mean, going all the way back to when Shakespeare, you know, in the 1500s was expanding this language to where it has a word for everything, every little nuance even. So descriptive, so colorful, so specific. And yet generations on, centuries on from that, look at how we've been dumbed down just in looking at our vocabulary for one, but then all the new words that they're adding these days, the swear words, the euphemisms, the slang, it just goes lower and lower and lower. God says in this Sodom and Gomorrah society that we really need to fight to maintain a pure and even perfect standard, striving for perfection, Matthew 5 and verse 48, realize just how powerful language can and should be. I mean, this is all part of the education here at God's College and even the academy before that, because as my father has said so many times, I mean, God has us here. God has us in his church, his family, to learn how to communicate a message. And we've got to be effective in doing that. Herbert Armstrong has a great section in his autobiography about how he learned to write with power and simplicity to convey a message clearly. He named his magazine, his monthly magazine, The Plain Truth. There's a simplicity to the truth of God, as Paul said. There's a plainness to it, and yet there's unlimited depth, as Paul said at the end of Romans 11. Oh, the depth and the riches of God's purpose and plan So we really do have to delve deeply into it and wrap our minds around it and then pray for God to open our minds to understand and to be able to express His truth in the clearest, most persuasive, most powerful way. That's not easy. And it's especially difficult when you're in a society like we are, where profane language is just utterly basic. This is from the online dictionary, the etymology dictionary on profanity. It says, profaneness, quality of being profane, profane language or conduct. From late Latin, profanitus, profaneness, it says from Latin, profanus, extended sense of foul language, is from the Old Testament commandment against profaning the name of the Lord. God says, don't even take the name of God in vain. Now, there's various ways that you can do that, but there's the obvious way of using curse words, bringing God into your discussion in a vain, repetitious way. People do it all the time. And if they don't state it outright, they throw in a euphemism. That's the same thing, basically. This is from 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 16 and 17. Again, just to emphasize, you know, who we are as God's people, as God's family. It says here, know you not that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? It says, if any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy. Which temple you are? The temple is filled with people that are holy. Think about 1 Kings chapter 10, when the Queen of Sheba visited Solomon's kingdom, and it just took her breath away. She saw all of this glory and splendor, and really what was most impressive to her were the people in that royal court, the people in that royal kingdom, the impact that righteous rule had on people. It was a beautiful scene, as I say. It took her breath away. The word profane really has to do with, you know, where you are, your position, your standing in the temple, who you represent. And we want to take that charge very, very seriously. We have to be in the presence of God at all times. I just read to you those two verses. God says, you are the temple. It's made up of its various parts and pieces. We're all those lively stones, as it says in 1 Peter 2. And so God is constructing this glorious structure, this temple, this kingdom, in fact. We're right there, and we need to remember that every time that we speak. As I say, it's challenging because of it becoming just utterly basic, profane language. I mean, you see sometimes even on the clips we play, we are hurrying to put everything together and we don't always bleep out some of the language that's off color. But we try to. I mean, we try to keep it as clean as we possibly can, but that's difficult. I mean, with some commentators, especially in independent media, you'd have to be bleeping something every other word almost. A few of them come to mind. You probably know the ones I'm thinking of. 1 Timothy 1, verse 9, it says, knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers. God, we have this holy and righteous law so that we can clean up our lives, so that we can clean up our act, so that we can purify our language even, and really speak for God, represent God and His character and His example and His holiness and purity. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 7, it says, but refuse profane and old wives' fables and exercise yourself rather unto godliness. This is something Paul emphasized in the pastoral epistles to Titus and Timothy. And he said, just, you know, refuse silly arguments even, things that would just waste your time. Shun profane and old wives' fables and really consume the truth of God. Be nourished. That's 1
1 Timothy 4 and verse 6. Be nourished on these precious words. Don't let the devil get in there and fill your mind with garbage. Garbage in, garbage out, as the saying goes. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. If you're just filling up on that sort of impure content, then it's going to show. It's going to show. Some sins show right away. Others take a little more time, like Paul said in 1 Timothy 5. But in either case, I mean, the fruits are going to be there in the end, whether they're good or bad. And so fill your heart with good things. Philippians 4:8. Fill up on whatsoever things are true and lovely and pure. And on that list goes over there. Notice 1 Timothy 6 and verse 20. This is a verse we refer to often when talking about the vaccines and the lockdowns and all the craziness that Fauci and others were behind just a few years ago. It says, O Timothy, keep that which is committed to your trust, avoiding profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science falsely so-called. Just avoid that, Timothy. And really concentrate on what you should be filling up on instead. You know, the days of unleavened bread formula. Okay, put the sin away. Yes, that's important. But really fill up on the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Sincerity, truth. This is 2 Timothy 2 and verse 16. It says again, shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness. It just ends up dragging everyone down. And even with respect to language and conversation, it's amazing how, and we've really tried to emphasize, you know, improving that this past school year, conversation, fellowship, before, after services. We've really tried to emphasize how there's a need for our young people to really step it up and to grow in this area. But Joel Hilliker gave a message recently where he was talking about just how one person could really kind of kill a conversation by just coming in and, you know, bringing silliness or vain babblings, to use the language Paul uses, instead of trying to really contribute to the conversation, to build it up, to uplift it. This is Matthew 12 and verse 34. It says, O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. See, the mouth speaks. Whatever's in your heart, that's what you're going to end up talking about. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. It really is important. You'd be surprised how many verses talk about speech and the purity of speech. I'll give you another, James 3, verse 5 and 6. It says, even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold, how great matter a little fire kindles. It says, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire of hell. That's how powerful the tongue can be, whether for good or bad. It can really be so destructive. Just going back to what I said yesterday on the show, the fact that we're just swimming in lies. Look at how much damage is done because of lying. So much profane dialogue, profane discourse. Remember what George Washington said. This is a vice. This is a vice. A vice heretofore little known in an American army. It's growing into fashion, and he hopes the officers will, by example as well as influence, endeavor to check it, and that both they and the men will reflect that we can have little hopes of the blessing of heaven on our arms if we insult it by our impiety. You would never hear a leader or a politician say anything like that today. He'd be laughed out of the room if he signed an order, a general order such as that. It's refreshing to get back to that. It's refreshing to hear what God says about the importance of striving for purity in all things, including in language. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, we'd love to hear from you. The email address, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us today. We thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.